Welcome to the PASL Podcast CMO Series.
Hello and welcome to the PASL Podcast, where we talk all things legal, business development and marketing. Today, we cover building the next generation of successful legal professionals. Lawyers are changing. The next generation of partners have a different set of backgrounds, motivations and criteria for success than those of today. To speak about adapting and preparing the next generation of legal professionals is someone who has seen the generational differences on the front line and up close. Murray Coffey, welcome to the CMO series.
Thanks, Charles, and thank you for having me, and thanks to my friends at PASL for sponsoring this. This is fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely, no problem. So, Murray, you've worked in the legal space for over two decades and also a former practicing lawyer. How have you seen lawyers changing over time? And can you pick out was there a moment when you realized this obvious generational difference?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I've been a lawyer for 30 plus years. Started out, as a practicing attorney. I was a public defender in Chicago for 8 years. We can do another podcast on that sometime, Charles.
Yeah.
But for the last 22 years, I've been in varying BD and marketing roles, and there's really, I think, two changes I saw somewhat early in my legal marketing career. And the whole arena of legal marketing is, compared to just to marketing in general, both in the US, the UK, Europe, et cetera, relatively new. It started with a US Supreme Court case back in 1977 or 78. I won't go into all that. But suffice it to say that there wasn't a lot of movement in the legal marketing arena for quite a few years after that decision, at least in the larger, more well-capitalized law firms. But what I started to see happening is that some of these very large, well-capitalized, super successful law firms began implementing, the firm's first full-scale marketing programs and put what was then considered a substantial number of resources towards these efforts. What I found interesting about this, and I knew a lot of these folks who were kind of on the vanguard of this, is that these programs were generally started by partners who were very successful, had portfolios of decades-long relationships that had, to put it bluntly, become something of an annuity for the partners and their firms. So one would ask, I think logically, why did they spend time and money investing in something that would likely not enhance the practices? And if you knew some of these early adopters, a couple of things that you noted about them is that many of them had started in these law firms as summer interns, summer associates. Once making partner, they never left those firms. So you could have people with 30, 40 years of, sometimes even more, history with a firm. That created some very substantial institutional loyalty. And these more established partners had almost a moral or ethical, emotional stake in seeing their law firms that they were in exist and compete far into the future. And they noted that things were changing. Competition was increasing. The way that they brought in business was probably not going to be the way that the firm would continue to bring in business. And as some of them would say to me at times when I was helping them get some of these programs set up, was, gosh, we're the best law firm in XYZ city. Why is that dumpy law firm down at the end of the road doing better than us? Oh, gosh, they have better sparklier materials. That was about as sophisticated as it got. But they did have this sense that something was changing. So there were some early investments that were made in building out these teams, moving from what I would call paraprofessionals to true business development and marketing professionals, more marketing professionals than BD professionals. The second big change came along around the same time. And again, this is kind of on the other side of the scale. There was a small number, but a number of younger lawyers who were moving into partnerships. So they were getting through their associate ranks, you know, had grabbed that brass ring. And most of them were making partner because, especially at that time, they were judged on the amount of billable hours they had delivered to the firm, not business development, not anything else, but just how were they workhorses and would they continue to be workhorses? And that's how they made partner. We can talk at some other time about how that's changed. Some of these really ambitious younger partners realized that they needed to build their own business or they would forever be stuck in an endless cycle of looking for work from partners and still having to build thousands of hours and, you know, rinse and repeat. So these young, hungry partners looked around and said, hey, you know, we've got these new marketing people. Maybe they can help me extend my efforts. And they were right. They were able to, these younger partners were able to leverage resources that frankly had been set up by partners who weren't using it very much and benefiting from it. When I started working with, there's one guy I know for sure who I worked with very early on in my legal marketing career who was an early adopter of working with marketing folks and kind of being very strategic about how he worked with those resources. And today he's the chair of a very well-known global firm. And when I started working with him, he didn't have clients, but he did have massive ambition. And I'm not sitting here laying claim for his success. The guy worked hard, deserved everything he got. But he was somebody who very early on took a much more commercial approach. And a lot of his partners did not, took a much more commercial approach to his practice. And that included working with marketing folks on a peer level. And it's probably easier for me to work with him on a peer level because, you know, we were similar age, I was a lawyer, et cetera, but he did figure that out and figured out that there were things that I could do with him and for him and around him that allowed him to focus on client relationships and building out those relationships. So those two things started to happen at the same time. And that was really, I think, a turning point. You know, there were a whole bunch of partners who came up at that time who did come up and make partnership because they built so much. And in about 10 years, they were suddenly finding themselves looking for new jobs because they had very little in the origination column. They were great at billing out work, but they had very little in the origination column. And the firms were beginning to say, no, you have to, if you're going to be a partner, you need to have much more in your origination column. So that did, that was a change that I saw, you know, happening and unfolding, and it worked out well for some folks and it was problematic for others. But those are kind of, that was kind of that early time when I said, okay, there's something here. I can stay in this area. I can continue to work with these folks and I'll look for those partners that I can be successful with.
Yeah. So actually I had a question written down for a bit later in the conversation, but I think it feeds in nicely to ask it now. Do you think then this next generation of lawyers, they're more receptive and more understanding of the value of marketing because it's a sort of necessity for them, really, when perhaps it wasn't for some of the older generation, I guess?
Yeah. You know, without a doubt, Charles, I think these younger lawyers are incredibly brand conscious, both in their professional and their personal lives. They may no longer be wearing those, you know, those pastel Lacoste golf shirts with the little alligator logos, but I can guarantee you that their buying decisions are informed by a very sophisticated sort of multi-level view and evaluation of the qualities of a brand. We can see what happens when previously highly regarded brands like Abercrombie and Fitch, for example, undermine their own brands. Their consumers flee. My discussion with younger partners around brand and its value are far more informed and nuanced than those I have with many of their partners who are substantially more advanced in their careers. What I think this is going to mean in the long term for the law firms is that these younger lawyers now, who inevitably will be headed for leadership positions in their firms, will be substantially more sophisticated and brand conscious and will expect the same of their marketers. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about what marketers need to be thinking about as this, you know, area is maturing in a way that I think is catching some of them off guard. But for sure, what I'm seeing at least is a much more nuanced understanding of the value of brand the value of their own brand, and in how that factors into their work on a daily basis, or their ability to get work and differentiate themselves to get work.
Yeah. So in terms of your role in the marketing team, what are you and the firm doing for this sort of next cohort of lawyers to really set them up and prepare them for success?
It's a sort of a rolling question, if you will. I think that the things that a law firm can and should be doing today is to sort of come to some maybe hard truths about the younger lawyers that they're hiring and what their expectations are. I think that when law firms are hiring, doing their law firm recruiting, what they're really doing in most cases is alumni recruiting. Very few of these young associates are going to make partner. Even fewer of them want to become partner, but yet they all want access to the firm's resources, especially those that can make them that can move them toward partnership, ironically. So the firms need to be educating their associates on BD and marketing fundamentals, and also involve them in overall BD process with the partners. Again, the how they would do this and so the different methodologies they can use, that can be an entire separate conversation. But I think that we have a really sophisticated group of younger lawyers who are moving into the law firms today, and so some of the hard truths are these professionals are the law firms have to realize these professionals are smarter than they are. They're more sophisticated than they are. They have exceedingly high expectations of the organizations in which they work, especially around issues of equality, DEI, corporate citizenship, personal autonomy. Firms that are persisting, and many are still doing this, persisting and sending the message that an associate or young professional should suffer, if you will, the same way that the older, more established partners suffered earlier in their careers, are not going to be the employer of choice. In fact, they'll be an employer of desperation. And so there is a sort of a reset that has to happen. And maybe it's because I'm in my 50s, yet I have fairly young children who are contemplating moving into the corporate world at some time in the not too distant future. And they're very different in their expectations than any of us were, and very much more aware of what's going on in the world than certainly my generation was.
Yeah. And do you think maybe that the last 2 years, going back on what you said about the expectations are different, probably the last few years have thrown a spanner in that works in the whole remote working and people taking a step back and saying, what do I actually want from life and my career? Do you think that's probably added to that mix as well?
I think so. I think when we get a chance to have a little bit of space between ourselves and this horrendous pandemic that we've all been working with, it forced a lot of firms to make changes that they swore they would never make, or they said they would make in word but not in deed. And you could see that so many firms had these remote work policies that were almost impossible for somebody to leverage, because you can work from home every other Tuesday once you've been here for 2 years or more, as long as your work can support that. Well, nobody who's worked in a law firm knows they can guarantee that they're going to be able to work from home every other Tuesday. That's impossible. You can't do that. So these programs were set up in such a way that, they were there in word, but not in deed. So there's been changes that have been forced upon these law firms that they're hoping to turn the clock back on in many respects, but they're to do so. And so, you know, and we always hear about the work-life balance and all of that. Look, if you're going to become a lawyer in an AmLaw 100 firm, you're giving up a little bit of your life for work. There's no two ways around it. And I think that most of these associates that we look at today and most of the marketing professionals who are in their roles understand that that's the case. And, you know, it's part of what you exchange for the levels of compensation, but you don't have to give up your life. You don't have to return to work, you know, 2 weeks after your child is born. and those kinds of things are changing rapidly. I do think that the pandemic is going to have some lingering effect in that regard. And you know, I think the firms are also for the first time facing the real challenge in terms of continuing to be able to recruit the best and brightest. There are so many more options for our best and brightest today that law firms are no longer competing with each other for young associates or even lateral partners. They're competing with consulting firms. They're competing with investment banks. They're competing with in-house counsel roles. They are competing with not-for-profits. They're competing in ways and with organizations that they've never had to compete with. They're competing with tech organizations. I mean, gosh, who wants to work? If you can get a job, you know, as a lawyer at Apple, why would you ever want to go work as a lawyer at a law firm? You're going to get paid as well. You're going to get stock as a you know, an Apple lawyer, and you get to be an Apple lawyer. I mean, that's cool. So there's a lot going on right now. There's incredible competition for work, even though these firms have, you know, posted up some great results. I think it's going to soften this year. We're going to see some folks waking up to the fact that their revenues are softening, their billable hours are softening, their collections are softening. And I think there's going to be some strong implications for that.
So just bringing things back to where we set out at the start about this idea of building the next generation of successful legal professionals, how will firms know if they're doing that, if they're achieving it, or will it be a case of if they're not doing it, that they're going to fall behind?
You know, associates, professional staff, clients, they vote with their feet. And I think that if a firm is seeing, you know, churn in one area, let's say in the associates, they're going to see it in other areas as well. And, you know, there is some churn to be expected, maybe even hastened, you know, in these days. But excessive turnover in associates, professional staff, and client base they're more than red flags. Those are kind of existential warning signs, as far as I'm concerned. And yet, what's interesting to me, at least, or maybe it's more ironic, I guess, is that most firms are very careful about monitoring associate and partner turnover and almost entirely ignore the same indicators for the professional staff and for, believe it or not, for their clients. I mean, if you asked most managing partners what the churn rate was on their client base, that's something they should have at their fingertips. Most of them won't have that. So I think that a firm can understand that it is going to be successful in the long term if they're able to see this churn, this inevitable churn, you know, slow down to a sustainable level. There are some very large firms out there today, very well-known firms, and I will not mention their names, but there are some very large firms out there with unbelievable revenue numbers. You know, we just saw the AmLaw 100 numbers come out a few weeks back. And yet you would be, when you talk to the folks who are on the inside, you would be astounded at the amount of churn, even though they're very large law firms. And so numerically, they're always going to have more churn than smaller firms, at least in numbers. But in terms of percentage and in terms of how many people sort of are tapping out, you know, very early on in their careers and moving on to do something else. And I think that, you know, those firms have some underlying fundamentals that they need to be looking at and may even be able to take some cues from some of the firms that are a little bit lower in the AmLaw 100, maybe not even in the AmLaw 100, but have figured out how to make their firms a place the clients want to stick with, the associates want to to settle in at, and the professional staff finds an appealing and rewarding place to work.
Yeah, so to bring that back actually to, well, the PASL podcast, where we always talk about marketing and BD team.
Sure.
What do you think that marketers and the BD team can be doing or proactively doing to encourage more of that sort of old style of never leaving, a firm for life, that loyalty, some of those traits, and sort of encourage that in this next generation of lawyers?
Well, I think they can be a factor in it. In the end, there's only so much any one group or group of professionals in a firm can do to create the environment that encourages people to stick around, to be dedicated, et cetera. But what I can say is that my fellow legal marketers, quite honestly, need to step it up. When I talk to so many of them, I was at a conference recently and saw dozens and dozens of colleagues. The common refrain that you hear is, oh, I'm so busy. Oh, we're so busy. Oh my gosh, we're so busy. And I think that what I've seen is that the term busy is a substitute. They try to substitute it for the idea of being productive. And I think busy and productive are two very different concepts. Law firm marketing departments can create a tremendous amount of activity, a lot of activity. There's pitches, there's proposals, there's events, there's meeting setups, there's practice meetings to organize. There's any number, PR, MarCom, all the rest of it. There's any number of ways that a marketing department can generate activity. My question, though, for the marketers is, what are you producing? What is the impact that you're having on the organization? And if you don't know what it is, if you don't know what the impact is, if you aren't able to, I'm not talking about return on investment here, but I'm talking about understanding where your activity intersects with and drives benefits to the firm. If you don't know that, then you probably aren't benefiting the firm. You're probably generating a lot of activity without a lot of impact. That's kind of a long way also saying that the younger partners who are coming in, the ones who are going to stick around or we want to stick around, are going to be expecting their marketers to be working much more collaboratively with them, much closer with them, to drive strategy, to drive tactics, to drive execution, to bring ideas to the table, and to be treated as a peer by the lawyers that they're working with, but also to behave as a peer with the lawyers that they're working with. And it's not enough to be seen as the legal marketer who's really responsive. Yeah, when I call Joe, Joe's right there for me. I can always count on Joe if I call Joe. My question is, when's the last time Joe called you? And for a lot of legal marketers, and this is another whole other subject someday, Charles, for a lot of legal marketers, their value has been in their availability. And I don't believe that value will be, that I don't believe that availability will drive value as we move forward in the future. It's going to be a much tighter integration, a merge, if you will, of the folks who are on the marketing and BD side and the folks who are on the legal, the professional services, the legal provision side. And I think that, if that happens, that is going to help the firms maintain the teams they have, and also has something to talk with about the folks who are coming in, being able to say, hey, we're not only going to train you to be good lawyers, we're going to train you to be great professionals. We're going to train you to be good business people. We're going to train you to talk the language that your clients are talking. And we're going to include you in the business development work from the ground up. The consulting firms are great at that. The only way you make it into the equity partnership ranks is if you actually have a book of business that is there and exists and is accretive to the bottom line. So that's where I think we as marketers can help the firms in creating an environment in which people want to stay there, who want to be the employer of choice. but we have to be empowered to do it. And we have to be, they have to be the right people who can be empowered. There's a lot of people in legal marketing today who are great at what they do, but they're not, they were not hired because they were viewed by the hiring partner as somebody who they could empower to, you know, make choices and be, have an influence in the organization. They were chosen because they were just good producers. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with being a great producer, but it is. But I think that that's table stakes today.
Yeah, I like the idea of the professional services really sort of collaborating with the lawyers. And one of the things I also jotted down was that idea. It sounds like a good thing to start off with is just having a bit of reflection and saying, am I busy or am I productive, and trying to understand the difference between the two of them. Finally, to wrap things off, and we like to end all of our podcasts this way, what would be your one piece of advice, your one key takeaway for marketeers, BD professionals that have their role that involves training up that next generation of lawyers for success?
Yeah, I alluded to it earlier. We are this sort of next gen group of lawyers have a set of expectations that are different than the generation that preceded them. And that's true for most generations. But I think this particular generation, which is fully digital native, which is, you know, by the very nature of the human beings that are attracted to the law, these are curious people, these are resourceful people, these are people who dig into the details, and they have access to details that people never had in the past. They have insider information that, you know, law firms can't possibly expect to control. So remembering that you have this incredibly well-informed, incredibly resourceful, incredibly resource-rich group of professionals moving into the practice today, and the traditions that, you know, sort of were almost, you know, almost like hazing that law firms engaged in for many years with their associates, that's over. I also think it's a unique time and opportunity for legal marketers to be able to step up and truly partner with the lawyers who are coming up in the practice today. It's very hard as a legal marketer to step up, to raise your hand, to risk, you know, positing an idea, because lawyers are trained to be skeptical and to pick it apart. And it for a lot of people, that has a tendency to have them sit on their hands. I strongly encourage people not to sit on their hands. I strongly encourage people to see this as a time of opportunity. And I strongly encourage people to be resilient enough to hear no, or to have to defend their ideas and move it forward. Because I think we're in a time right now where people want to hear those ideas, at least especially the younger up and coming lawyers.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of legal marketers stepping up and becoming partners with their lawyers. Yep. Well, that's all we have time for today. Murray, thanks for joining us and sharing some insight around what firms can be doing for preparing their next generation of legal professionals.
Sure, absolutely. And if any questions come in on this and anybody has a question for me, I'm happy to field those offline. Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and look forward to hearing it.
Brilliant. Thanks, Murray. Thanks for your time.